welcome to Future Intended, where we share stories about people and programs supported by Hamilton Community Foundation and the issues that matter to our community. The title comes from our tagline, History Made, Future Intended. We've been driving positive change in Hamilton since 1954, and we're ready to do it now and forever.
Terry Cook, CEO of the Hamilton Community Foundation. Today we're going to talk about the establishment of a queer archives in Hamilton and about the history of organizing and activism within the 2S LGBTQ community. And I'm pleased to welcome some friends. Cole Gately, person about town, but for the purposes of this interview, you're an adult educator. And in the purpose of full disclosure, you're doing some work for the Community Foundation as we speak, and we're proud and glad to have you doing that work for us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Amber Dean, professor of English and Cultural Studies at my alma mater, McMaster University.
Yes.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I always like to start with biography because it informs both who we are and the passion that we bring to our work. And I would love to have each of you take a couple of minutes and tell us, A, how you came to do the work you're doing, and B, how you became involved in this project.
Okay. Well, my interest in queer archives, queer history comes from my own identity as lesbian, being part of the queer community. Yeah. I moved to Hamilton in 2006, roughly. So my history here is not actually all that old, but old enough to know that now there are several new generations of younger queer activists about town who I have the pleasure often of teaching at McMaster, and got to learn a little bit about their lack of knowledge of some of the history of recent events, even like controversy over police involvement in Pride and things like that. A lot of history that just doesn't get recorded, that gets lost when you're kind of working within a marginalized community. So that's part of the, I don't know, passion that drove me to the work, I guess.
Fantastic. Cole, same question.
Yeah, so I've been out and about in the community as a queer person since the early 90s, like 1991, actually. So and I learned, you know, how to be a queer in Hamilton, how to be, I came out as a lesbian and now I identify as a trans man. And I learned from elders in the community, actually, you know, from women. The women's bookstop was in town in those days. And so I worked there for a decade in the 90s and really cut my teeth and learned a lot about our histories in Hamilton, the history of Stonewall, the history of queer liberation. And became really involved in community organizing over the years.
Say, you reminded me of Obama's second inaugural. He mentioned Seneca Falls, Stonewall, and Selma. Three seminal points in the history of civil rights in the United States.
Amazing.
Points of departure that often are lost on folks who haven't taken the time to learn our history. Right?
Yeah, and sort of, I think if we learn about our history, if we understand what went before and on whose backs our liberation is founded, then we have a much richer understanding of what to do for future generations.
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask both of you about this whole movement, particularly south of the border, but somewhat here, of erasing history and being uncomfortable with the fact that history often makes us uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that phenomenon and how do we counter that political impulse that is rising along with populism and xenophobia and a whole lot of other things that are a real threat to democracy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big question. I do think that part of marginalized groups wanting to form archives like this is working against that kind of impulse of forgetting histories, which happens even like within small marginalized communities, let alone talking about kind of big scale histories being erased and through book bannings and things like that that we're seeing in the US. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, even in the last few years, we've seen the creation of a Black community archives in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. There's an Indigenous Histories Project of Hamilton project underway right now. And then this 2S LGBTQ plus archive. So I think these moves towards archiving are driven by a desire to not forget history, to counter that move that you're describing.
And Cole, have you bumped up against that on this project?
Well, when you think about the discomfort that people feel in having these conversations, I like to take it back to the discomfort that people feel facing marginalization and facing mm-hmm. discrimination and facing barriers and facing violence and murder, frankly, you mm-hmm. know, especially amongst trans people, right. trans women of color. And so, but in my opinion, as an educator, I believe that the only way to change or to effect change or to feel motivated to change is to feel uncomfortable. Right. Nobody's going to make change if they're feeling completely comfortable yeah. in this with mm-hmm. the status quo. So when people feel uncomfortable, let's look at that and let's reflect upon it and let's figure out how to not feel uncomfortable anymore. And that really is about looking at these histories and understanding that we are all trying to get through this thing called life, as Prince says. And we, I always refer to Prince. And so, for the future, for there to be this lack of erasure and for people to thrive in communities, we need to understand that there are, you know, 8 billion of us on the planet and mm-hmm. we're all just, you know, trying to live our lives.
In the words of Rodney King, can't we all just get along?
Yeah, right.
Talk about who Michael Johnstone was and how his historic material came to form the basis of this archive.
So Michael Johnston was a nurse in Hamilton. He was retired and he was very much involved in queer, or in those days it would be called gay and lesbian yeah. Organizing. And obviously things grew, but he was involved in the very sort of in very early days of the early 70s. He and other people who are still around, some of whom are still in Hamilton, really, you know, they realized that they needed to support each other and they needed support for themselves. So they started up, you know, groups like the McMaster Homophile Society. They started up, McMaster had GLAM and then mm-hmm. they changed it to GLABAM when bisexuality started being sort of recognized as part of the community. And so Michael was on the founding board of the AIDS Network when it was called Hamilton AIDS Network mm-hmm. for Dialogue and Support in the mid-80s and late 80s. And he just had this penchant for gathering every little tidbit there was about our queer communities in mm-hmm. Hamilton, but also elsewhere in Ontario and Canada. And he gathered over 30 boxes of newspaper clippings, meetings minutes, newsletters, T-shirts, all sorts of things. And he just kept them all in his house. And I knew about this. Over the years, I had known Michael, you know, since I came out, really, since the 90s. Mm-hmm. So I approached him back in probably 2016 or 17. And I was just like, you know, we were just hanging out. And he used to run a supper club, a queer supper club, every month as well that would wander around town. And so I met him and I just said, what are you planning on doing with all the stuff that you've gathered? Because I'm pretty interested in our history, and what about if you decided to donate it to the library, Hamilton Public Library, and I could probably facilitate something mm-hmm. like that. So he was really up for it, and we met, you know, on a regular basis just for a coffee, but also to talk about this stuff. And then eventually, in 2018, he actually called me up and said, "Listen, I've got something to tell you. Can we meet for coffee?" And it turns out he had cancer. And so then it became obviously awful that he was dying, but also it became even more important to get this transfer done. Mm-hmm. So he was very agreeable, actually, in his, you know, in his hospital bed. He actually signed the form saying, making, appointing me and also another member of our community, Bill McKinnon, to be the community stewards of the of his collection, and then to donate it to Hamilton Public Library, which we're very happy to receive it. And then we got together. I got together with Amber, and then and Michael died, unfortunately. Paul Takala, the chief librarian, actually presented Michael by proxy. I accepted it, but a plaque accepting the archives and thanking him for the mm-hmm. donation. And then he passed away later in 2018. And then Amber took it off to the races with her course at McMaster, and the students have been amazingly excited to get involved. And we actually did it, video interviews, and we've got a short video coming out, and we've got a website, and
yeah,
it's just taken
what,
off.
What a remarkable act of generosity and trust that I'm sure you were touched by.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So tell us about both how this intersects with your teaching and the work of your students.
Yeah, so around the time that, well, not long after Michael died, actually, and when Cole was just starting to build this archives with Hamilton Public Library, I developed a course on the history of lesbian and gay writing, art, and activism in Canada. And the kind of it goes about 1969 to 1989. Yeah. So a lot of that period is covered by the materials that Michael had collected. Yeah. And I was planning to take my students to Toronto, where they have the National LGBTQ Archives. The archives with a Q, for a field trip. And Cole was like, we have an archives here. The students can work on that material. And so we got really excited. We built that into the course. And then the first offering of the course was in fall 2020, when HPL was shut down, as was everything else.
Yeah.
So we had to pivot a little bit. That year we did an online version of the course, but still students were able to contribute to building the archives. Like, part of Michael's donation involved two boxes of VHS tapes, and nobody knew what was on those tapes. And Hamilton Public Library wanted to know what was on them, because they wanted to know, is there value in digitizing some of these, or should we keep these? What should we do? So students were able to take those home, especially if they still were able to dig up a VHS machine from their grandparents' basements, a lot of them. Yeah. Or we have a couple of VHS machines on campus in the library, and they just were able to catalog the contents of those tapes. I bet there's some Cable 14 footage on there, actually, because it turned out a lot of it was just Michael taping anything queer related that came up on the local news.
Can I ask the significance of the years that your course covers? Why 69?
Well, 69 is sometimes proclaimed as the year that homosexuality was legalized in Canada, because that's the year that Trudeau said, get people out of the bedrooms of the state.
Yeah.
Or the state has no place in the bedrooms of the nation. Right. Yeah. However, we know that, in fact, that's a myth about Canada, that it was decriminalization at the time, because it was not that many years after that the police were still raiding bathhouses. Mm-hmm. And, we still have forms of queerness that are, I would say, are criminalized today, in the sense that they're heavily policed, right, and targeted for harassment by law officials.
Yeah.
But that's why I kind of started the course in 69, because there was a significant period of what we now call gay liberation activism over the next couple of years. And then after 89, things shifted in terms of a major focus on gaining rights from the state, marriage, equality law, things like that. So there's a bit of a shift there too in terms of the political bent. So it just seemed like a good period to look at. I'm really interested personally in the activism that happened in that period of time, because there was a real vision for not just gaining inclusion in society as it is, but transforming everything, like transforming society from the ground up.
So, fascinating.
Yeah.
Amber, you triggered in me a memory. We had an event not that long ago at the Spice Factory. And in the course of talking to the people who had redeveloped that into event space, they talked about how it had been a gay men's club back in the 80s, maybe early 90s. And there were multiple locks on the property and alarm systems, precisely because the police frequently raided the place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And just, and frankly, I was the chairman of the police service board back in that era. So I'll take some responsibility. I don't have any recollection of even being aware of that club. Mm. But again, it was instructive for me to think about what was happening and how that would affect the communities involved. So talk about activism and organizing and how it's changed over the years and your experiences personally.
Well, really, when I came out, it was 1991, which was the beginning of the 90s. And there were things happening. In fact, what happened in 1990, I think maybe that year or the next year, 1992, the police actually did unannounced, I guess it was a raid of a local cruising spot, a park in Hamilton. And
Dundurn Park,
RBG around there. Yep. And basically they dressed up as if they were gay men. going mm-hmm. cruising.
Yep.
And then they arrested anyone who touched them. It was a major controversy because what had happened was that basically the police kind of entrapped these gay men mm-hmm. into, and they charged them with sexual assault and indecent exposure. And the community just, you know, was very alarmed about mm-hmm. this. So actually the police, to their credit back in those days, their community relations coordinator was brilliant and, got,
remember who it was?
It was Jane Malkovich, actually.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, there we go.
I should have known that.
Yeah, it was Jane did a great job of getting members of our queer communities together with the police. And we did this whole process with at least three meetings where it ended up where the very first, it was called in those days, the GLBT Police Task Force.
Yeah.
And I actually was encouraged by an older lesbian in the community to stand for election to be on that committee, which I was, or on the police task force, which I was accepted. And so that was a really good example of the queer community saying, hey, we're having enough of this.
Right.
We're no longer going to stand for, you know, being criminalized for, you know, for expressing ourselves. And we're going to work with the police to change policy to be more inclusive. And so that's how I first got involved. And I was definitely involved in, you know, lesbian organizing and feminist organizing and those intersections as well. And over the years, you know, in later years, more recent years, there have been, you know, there's you know, the Pride Committee has gone up and down yeah. with lots of different people involved and everything. And I think that what really would be, what is great is if those who are organizing now looked back to see what had happened in mm-hmm. those days. What do we not need to repeat? Right. What do we need to sort of learn from what those guys all experienced when it was illegal to get married? It was illegal to even, you know, go to a bathhouse in those right. days. So it's sort of, it's evolved over the years. And I am a bit shocked that we're still sort of dealing with issues where people don't feel safe, where trans people are still, you know, facing discrimination in all facets of life, including with the police, but everywhere else in employment and healthcare, et cetera, as well. And trans people are much more visible as well. It's not that there are more trans people. It's just that because it's easier to come out, people are feeling that way, but there's also pushback happening. Yeah. There's discrimination happening.
Amber, the old line is that the arc of justice is long, but it bends towards the arc of history of long. Arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice, does it?
Yeah, I'd like to think so, but I don't know that. Like the history of queer organizing in Canada can't actually be told as a kind of progress narrative, really, right. because it seems like there are certain kinds of steps forward, but then often big steps back. Mm-hmm. The example I was talking about earlier is a good one. 1969, de facto decriminalization, but mm-hmm. then just a few short years after that, intensified policing, bathhouse raids, things right. like that. Any kind of public expression of sex or sexuality yep. is heavily being policed. So we can't just tell a story yep. of a direct kind of move to greater rights or greater justice, because we also have to think about, you know, within the LGBTQ community, there's a huge amount of diversity. And mm-hmm. so while certain changes like marriage laws have benefited some of the most privileged in the community, mm-hmm. they do nothing to create greater justice for those who are most marginalized. So, mm-hmm. I don't think I can endorse that. Version of
history. So the bounce back after 69, mm-hmm. just from history, there's the Emmanuel Jacques murder in Toronto, and right. that seemed to mm-hmm. have provoked a severe backlash
yes.
and a, if you will, an over-policing, yeah. a more radicalized approach to the then gay and lesbian community.
Right.
And certainly there was a retrenchment in my memory of that.
Yeah. With ripple effects here in Hamilton, right. as Cole was talking about, even before the 90s, you know, there was an intensification of that kind of policing of gay or male sexuality in public spaces.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the role and contributions that allies can make who are concerned about the civil rights of all citizens, and particularly with respect to the communities that you are a part of.
Yeah.
Talk about that, if in fact folks want to make a difference, how would that manifest itself?
In my opinion, start with your children. Start to, unpack or think about those stereotypes that we're teaching our children. You know, big boys don't cry.
Yeah.
Not true. All girls want to be princesses. Not true. So let's just try and unpack and realize how we're socializing our children to follow these very strict gender roles and the gender binary. Let's sort of understand that there's diversity. There's diversity amongst people. There's diversity amongst trans people. There's diversity amongst men, and cisgender people. So start young. I mean, it's not about talking about sex. It's just about talking about reality that, pink isn't inherently feminine. And also let's talk about those histories so that we can learn from them, so that adults now can learn from them, and we can teach our kids the reality of the world. Because if we don't do that, then we're setting children up, to fail later in life. And
yeah, everyone can learn from the history of queer struggles in Canada and their local community, I think. And I get a good mix of students in my course every year. A lot of queer students and trans students, but not all of them, certainly. Yeah. And I think those other students are there because they genuinely want to learn, because they do want to learn how to be a better ally, an effective ally, a supportive ally. And that kind of learning.
There is still profound risk, particularly for trans people in this community. Talk about that reality in the short time that we have left.
Well, I ask people, when was the last time you walked into a store, a doctor's office, an agency, and you were greeted by a visibly trans woman at the front desk? And more often than not, people say never. Or they might say, oh, there's that one woman who works somewhere. It's like, okay, that's one.
Right.
Right? So that doesn't actually mean that inclusion is happening. So let's think about what we can do to make those spaces more open and to understand that everyone. I'm sort of rambling now, but do you want to pick up?
Well, I think that part of just to take it back to the archives, I guess, part of one of the things that we've recognized is that while Michael was a prolific collector, he collected materials mostly pertaining to organizations that he was involved with which were predominantly for gay men. And so we have recognized the importance of building on his initial donation to ensure that trans histories in Hamilton are also part of that collection and that history, right? So that people can learn those histories, I guess, as one strategy for addressing the ongoing discrimination and injustices that are, as you say, very rampant and a sign of that there's inequity even within the LGBTQ plus umbrella. So.
In the minute or so left, do you feel at this point more hope and optimism or pessimism about the state of our community and the rights and opportunities for all of our citizens?
I'm always feeling hopeful, so I feel fairly hopeful. I'm glad that the police service has hired their, I can't remember the EDI
title,
or the person, Rebecca Banky.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that that's happening. I'm glad with our new council. I'm glad that, I am hopeful, but I'm not saying it's all taken care of. So I'm definitely going to be challenging our leaders and our cisgender people and heterosexual people to, they're the ones who need to do the hard work of ending transphobia and ending homophobia.
And let's not be complacent.
Yeah.
Last word to you.
My students make me really hopeful because they're very, very excited to learn about the histories of lesbian and gay life in Hamilton. And it's something that they, for a lot of queer and trans students, they didn't recognize that there is this long history that has such a richness to it, that there were so many organizations, even in the late 70s when Michael started collecting. And so I think what makes me hopeful is actually these opportunities to kind of learn from the past. And then we can kind of unite across generations. There are better chances for not making the same mistakes over and over again, I guess, but moving our struggles for justice forward. So.
Fantastic.
It's hopeful.
On that note, sadly, we're out of time, but I want to thank you both, Amber Dean from McMaster, Cole Gately, adult educator and a friend. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, for the difference you're making in our community, and for continuing to carry the torch.
Thank you for listening to Future Intended, where we talk about the people and programs supported by Hamilton Community Foundation and the issues that matter to our community. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, hit subscribe to get future podcasts. Follow us on social media, subscribe to our e-newsletter for the latest news and stories, and visit our website at hamiltoncommunityfoundation.ca.